Jai Ma. So we have basically completed a chapter-wise reading passages, not line by line, from Essays on the Gita. So this is not summarizing the book again, because the last chapter is summary given by Sri Aurobindo himself. But there are aspects, certain questions which come up inevitably. And this is very beautifully one can find in Sri Aurobindo and the mother's writings. So I've just taken out those passages to read. And if there are any questions, one question I already have. So we'll read some of these passages. They are from different places. They are from different places from Sri Aurobindo's writings, his collected works. One of them is for Sri Aurobindo. This we have right at the beginning said, Sri Aurobindo is not a pedagogue, he is not translating Sanskrit into English and thereby writing the Gita. We should be very, very clear on that. Sri Aurobindo has lived the Gita, he has read, if I may say so, what Sri Krishna is on the verge of saying but does not say. For example, as Chotnarayanji used to say, that Sri Krishna knocks at the gates of the supermind but doesn't open it. Because the world is not ready, the conditions are different. So we have to understand that no scripture should be made like there is nothing beyond it. Because ultimately Sri Aurobindo says the scripture is within the heart. The Veda is within the heart. That is the basic truth. But these scriptures which are so profound, in the Gita there is very little that is temporal, so much that is eternal, that it is going to not only has helped mankind, will continue to help mankind. So in that context we have to read it. And Sri Aurobindo, when he came out of the Alipur jail on 30th May, in his Uttarpada speech, he had lived the essays on the Gita, or rather he had lived the teachings of the Gita. We know how he had a living relation with Sri Krishna. And he was asked that, well, which Sri Krishna were you in contact with? Meaning thereby that we know there is a Sri Krishna of the gopis and Gop, and Sri Krishna of Vrindavan, and there is Sri Krishna of Kurukshetra. At least these two Krishnas are very distinct in certain ways. So he was asked, and which Sri Krishna came to you in Alipur jail? And he says, Sri Krishna of the Gita, of the Kurukshetra. His life was Kurukshetra. That time India was in Kurukshetra. So Vrindavan was yet to wait. As he said, ultimately we have to prepare ourselves for that day. And as we know, even the story, if you go to Vrindavan, you will see that the place where Nidhivan, where the Raslila took place apparently. So it's all bushes, and not very pleasant bushes. So it hits you very hard when you enter there thinking, oh, this is the place where Raslila took place. And of course, the story goes that all the gopis, and they become bushes in the morning, and at night they come together. And nobody can see it, because if you see it, it seems, the story goes that somebody forced hiding himself and went mad. But whatever be the story, it means we are not yet ready for the true Vrindavan. That's what comes in Sri Aurobindo's writing, that the world of truth, the supramental truth, is necessary before we can be ready for the true Vrindavan, which exists to descend upon earth. So this is the background. So we are in preparation, world in preparation, so that the true Ras Leela may one day manifest. Otherwise, it remains a story which is deeply symbolic and spiritual, not something which has necessarily manifested upon earth. This is the background. And then Sri Aurobindo, in his Uttarpada speech, which we are just referring, summarizes the Gita in very few words. And I think if we can just practice this, it is so wonderful. So he says, he spoke to me again. He is Sri Krishna, because he came to give him messages in the jail. He spoke to me again and said, the bonds you had not strength to break, I have broken for you. It's so wonderful. I think this is itself a wonderful piece of Kalyan Shraddha. Many times in life, there are things which are taken away from us. We cling to them. We cling to the past. Only two things Mother spoke about the new creation, what is needed. She gave us two mantras. And most important was, do not cling. And she says, do not cling to anything. You have to go towards a future which nobody has experienced. So especially clinging to the past, because you have to go toward the future. Take the essence of the past, the truths of the past, and use it as a springboard for the future. That's what we find in Sri Aurobindo's message, that the past is a springboard to leap toward the future. So he says, the bonds I have broken for you. And in Sri Aurobindo's life, the bond was that he wanted the freedom of the country before he would take full scale into yoga. And that was his, when Sri Krishna comes to him in Alipur jail, he says, why am I here now? You know that, why did I go into this freedom movement? Because I love the country. I asked nothing for myself. I just want freedom for my people. After that, he thought he would take up yoga. But Sri Krishna had other plans and he broke that bond. He is speaking of an inner bond, attachment to a kind of work which he thought is the work which he is here to do. And so this is the bond he has spoken of. The bonds you had not strength to break, I have broken for you, because it is not my will, nor was it ever my intention that that should continue. You went into it, chose it, but my intention is something else. I have another thing for you to do, and it is for that I have brought you here, to teach you what you could not learn for yourself and to train you for my work. So if you just remember, this is such a mahavakya, that we think this work is given to me. We really don't know what work is being prepared. This is a preparation. And it's so beautiful to remember that whole life is a series of preparation for the next, for the next, for the next. Then he placed the Gita in my hands. His strength entered into me and I was able to do the sadhana of the Gita. So it's a grace if one can do the sadhana. It's easy to read and know the meaning of the words. That's the easiest part. But to do the sadhana of the Gita, and now he summarizes for all of us, I was not only to understand intellectually, but to realize what Sri Krishna demanded of Arjun and what he demands of those who aspire to do his work. So again, intellectual understanding may be a good background, but it is not enough. So what is his demand? That there comes the crux of the whole story. To be free from repulsion and desire. So step by step, kindergarten schooling, be free from repulsion and desire, attractions, attachments, all that comes. To do work for him without the demand for fruit. I will get this chair, I'll get this position, I'll get this, that. So first thing, in ashram, I think in Auroville also, mother takes it away. You don't get promotions, you don't get paid. These two things that are drivers of average life are taken away. So you have to either rely on completely that one thing which I'll get is ma. Otherwise, one will be unhappy. So he says, what is demanded is to be free from repulsion and desire, to do work for him without the demand for fruit, to renounce self-will and become a passive and faithful instrument in his hands. Self-will is one of the biggest problems. Things should be done my way. I feel like this. I want it this way. Throw out of the window. His will. What is his will? We have to wait upon to know. That also is a question I have taken out. Because this is the practical thing. To have an equal heart for high and low. So beautiful and so important. That is a lesson in Alipur jail, that people whom we call as chote log, the lower kind, and how, you know, they are all manifestations of God. To have an equal heart for high and low, friend and opponent, my side or other side. It is so difficult. Because why? Then how will we act? Well, it's not about side. It's about truth which is manifesting. You have to just see that. There are no two sides. You don't become enemies. That's the lesson of the Gita. Because Shri Krishna says you fight without any hatred, without any anger. So one wonders. It's not taking sides. It's because of the truth. Truth must manifest. Whatever is true, whatever is beautiful, whatever is the divine will. Success and failure, these will come in the way, is a line in Shobindo's poem, The Divine Worker. He says, failure is, success is thy passage mirrored through fortune's glass. Success is thy passage mirrored through fortune's glass. Failure is cradled on thy deathless arms. So, cradled. It's what a word he uses. All failure is a preparation for us to grow up. See, he uses such a perfect word, you can't replace it. Cradled. Failure is cradled. What is a cradle? Where the child is growing. And who is holding the cradle is the divine. So, either ways, it's not we. So, failure is cradled on thy deathless arms. Success is thy passage mirrored through fortune's glass. Yet, so when all this happens, our normal response is, okay, basically we have to go do the work casually and somehow I am doing my 6 hours of work and that's the end of the story. I am not doing for success, failure doesn't affect me. No. So he says very beautifully, yet, not to do his work negligently. Now you can't, you are not doing for these things, but because it's divine work. I realized what the Hindu religion meant. We speak often of the Hindu religion, of the Sanatana Dharma, but few of us really know what that religion is. Other religions are preponderatingly religions of faith and profession, but the Sanatana Dharma is life itself. It is a thing that has not so much to be believed as lived. So this is where, now, Gita is a Dharma Shastra. So, Shobindu defines the word dharma. There are several places he has defined dharma. So here he defines it very interestingly. Dharma in the Gita, so what is my dharma? This is something which often comes to us. What is dharma? So here he defines dharma. There are several places in the Gita, essays on the Gita we have read. The whole chapter 1, whole talk was on dharma. But here he says something very interesting. Dharma in the Gita means the law of one's essential nature, or is described sometimes as action governed by that nature. Swabhava and Swadharma. Dharma is not religion to which I am born or belong. It's the natural impulsion within me. That's why when the Gita says at the end, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. You have a way of living which comes deep from within you. Surrender that. Now be an obedient instrument of the divine. And that's what we see first training in ashram that Mother and Sri Aurobindo would give. One of them, we have probably spoken about it. Rishabh Chand, he was sent to furniture department and he wrote very letter to Mother. I am so happy you have sent me whatever work you give me. He was quite an intellectual, very his book. Sri Aurobindo, his life unique is one of the masterpieces. So he writes a letter to the mother, very thank you letter, gratitude, gratitude, gratitude. Meanwhile, before he can send the letter, the assignment comes to him that you have to kill the bugs in the furnitures, cots. So he keeps that letter on the side and writes another letter, this time to Sri Aurobindo. Mother perhaps does not know that I am a Jain and I am not supposed to kill any creature. So, Sri Aurobindo writes, do what the mother tells you in the spirit of surrender and obedience. That is the way which will take you to the highest. And everybody who has walked have gone this way. That Sarva Dharman Parityajya, we have this person who Roland Nixon, Krishna Prem. So when he, Dilip Kumar Roy, good friend, there is a correspondence where he would connect Krishna Prem to Sri Aurobindo and back and forth. So Krishna Prem, when he went, he was given the task by Ma Yashoda, whose husband had given to Sri Aurobindo first time a very poor translation of the Gita. So there is a connection of another kind. So he was given the task of cooking, making chapatis. And he was a mathematician. So he was asked by a friend who came from UK, "Do you think you will reach God this way? Making chapatis?" And his reply is so wonderful. He said, "All who have walked this way." Surrender. So that's what Sarv Dharman Parityaja means. It's not about religion. Sarv Dharman, now I don't have any religion, I have no religion. Religion is not something external. It's your inner truth which expresses itself in certain ways. Even that has to be surrendered so that the divine will may occupy us. Then I have taken out some passages here and there which I felt are relevant in today's context. So there is a tendency, there are some books also, where people take out passages from essays on the Gita and they have the particular sloka and they have the translation of those slokas. People had asked me also that essays on the Gita, why don't you take that? I said, no, this is not to be done. So this is what I am going to read, that what Sri Aurobindo has spoken about it, and there is a reason for it. So someone has asked, "My brother is thinking of starting a book selling and publishing business and has asked for one or two books of Sri Aurobindo for publication." And then he speaks of a compilation, but I'll go to straight away that particular letter. Yes. Very clearly says that this is not a practice to be done. Do not read, make, put these translations because here only it is. So he wants an edition of the Gita with only the text. So text of the Gita. And Sri Aurobindo's translation compiled from the essays on the Gita. Some books are available also. I'm not talking about it. And there are a number of talks which go on in the name of Gita, where people take out the shlokas and they take out passages from Sri Aurobindo. What does Sri Aurobindo has to say? He says, "The casual renderings in the essays cannot be published as my translation. They were not intended for the purpose." And actually, when you see, it is true. You will find below it is written all the slokas, but it is not a translation. In fact, it's an enlargement. It's going into the depths. It's going into vastnesses which literal translation doesn't give us. And it's not interpretation either, because they are lived truths. They are not interpretations of the mind. So if one has enough faith in Sri Aurobindo, read essays on the Gita, as simple as that. Otherwise, there are so many translations available. And then he makes a difference between the ordinary karma yoga in the Gita and the yoga of divine works in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. So there is a question asked before coming here. I found some justification for my anger from your essays on the Gita, though I must say that the tendency to violence was already there. Will there be any place for some sort of violence in the new creation? This is another relevant question. People often justify. I know actually people have acted like that and they have justified in the name of the Gita. Shobindo's words. "The essays on the Gita explain the ordinary karma yoga as developed in the Gita, in which the work done is the ordinary work of human life with only an inward change." So for the Kshatriya, it's war. That's what it means. "There too, the violence to be used is not a personal violence done from egoistic motives, but part of the ordered system of social life. Nothing can spiritually justify individual violence done in anger or passion or from any vital motive. In fact, the mother has said, especially verbal violence, she has said it's equivalent to committing spiritual suicide. She has used the word that verbal violence in the form of slander and all kinds of things we in anger say. Abuses. In our yoga, our object is to rise higher than the ordinary life of man. And in it, violence has to be left aside altogether. So this rising higher and even the fourfold order, it has to go beyond it. So it is not like fourfold order continues forever. So in the Gita, it's because that is the social context which is taken. But the new creation will go beyond it. So that's what he's reminding us. Again, the person has asked, once again, this is worth remembering. I have compiled a translation of most of the slokas of the Gita using your interpretation of them in essays on the Gita. I request you to give me permission to publish the book as it will help the public to understand the Gita from your point of view. These books are available even in our... I don't know about Auroville, they are definitely available in ashram. And what does Sri Aurobindo say? The permission cannot be given. The translations in the essays are more explanatory than textually precise or cast in a literary style. I do not want that to go out as my translation of the Gita. I think that settles this question, which often comes. Read the essays. What is there? I mean, I just don't understand. Everything is there and more, I would say. Of course, he says, it is our belief that the Gita will become the universally acknowledged scripture of the future religion. And then he says that, but the real meaning of the Gita has not been understood at all. Okay. He speaks about surrender. It is difficult for a human being to make a complete self-surrender. He says it's not easy. We think surrender is the easiest, surrender is the most difficult. Somebody asked the mother, "Mother, what topic you'll take today?" She said, "Why, last time you gave us, talked about surrender, I have done it." She says, "You have done it?" "You have done it?" Surrender is most difficult because the biggest obstacle is self-will. Self-will has to be surrendered. Complete equanimity is required to live only for the divine, all this. So he says from the Gita, he puts across, it is difficult for a human being to make a complete self-surrender. But if he makes even a little effort, then God himself gives him assurance. So this is applicable, we can say, to Mother and Sri Aurobindo's yoga also. Doesn't matter how much we are able to do. Some people don't take it, saying it is very difficult. Others say, let me take up even one drop. And that's why the famous words of the mother, which in dining room we find, wonderful words. One drop of practice is far more important than an ocean of theories and good advices. So this, the same truth comes here. What does the Gita say? God himself gives his assurance, becomes his guru. Whose guru? Who is trying to put into practice. Protector and friend, and leads him forward on the path of yoga. Even if he makes a little effort. That's all that is required. Not that that's the ultimate. Oh, very nice. I'll make only little effort. But start with that. Svalpamasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little of this dharma delivers one from the great fear. He has said that it is easy and delightful to practice this dharma. And in fact, it is so. Yet the result of the total consecration is an inexpressible joy, purity and acquisition of power. So he says that, well, this is what happens when you do the practice. Who would not want to be in a state of inner joy, peace, receive that great assurance from the Lord, to have the doors of knowledge wide open, the power to do whatever work is entrusted to you to do. I mean, who would not want it? So that's why he says that, that's why one must go in that direction. Mame Vaishyasi, to me thou shalt come, means the human being will find me, will live with me, will acquire my nature. In these words, the realizations of Sadrishya, God nature, Salokya, living with God, and Sayujya, identification with God, are mentioned. So basically, start with whatever little one can do. Many people, I am aware, because people write letters and say, oh, this is so difficult. This is the difficulty. That because it is difficult, I won't do. Rather, it should be, if I feel impelled to do it, I must do it. Even if it is impossible, because that should be the spirit. I am impelled to do it, I just can't help it. This is what comes to me. Maybe it's the most difficult thing in the world to do, but this is it. There was someone very interesting thing I remember in Cape Town. There was a meeting of Auroville International. So people were speaking about Auroville is very difficult even then. Okay, this is 20 years. How many years back, I think? Maybe 20 years. It is very difficult. It is very difficult. Then one of the persons from Auroville said something very beautiful. I just had a spontaneous applause. He said, yes, Auroville is very difficult. That is why it is worth doing it. I said, I love this. Absolutely. We are always looking for easy things. Easy way out is the same bourgeois and the mentality. I want an easy way out. Life should be easy. But yoga is not easy. Even human life is difficult. So what? That's why it's worth doing. But what is it that comes ultimately? He has told us. And then he gives us, elaborates a little more. One who is free from the bondage of the three essential modes of nature. Because that is one thing which is explained in the Gita. Trigunatit bhavasavyasachi. What is the sign? Has indeed acquired sadrishya. He has become like God. Sadrishya, the nature of God. He has no attachment, yet he works. Not working because he's attached to work. If he's given the work, wonderful. If it's taken away, he lets it go without the least worry. Delivered from all sin, he becomes an instrument of Mahashakti and delights in every action of that power. This was Sadrishya Mukti. So what the Gita promises, Sri Aurobindo also speaks of this in the synthesis of yoga, that these are the muktis in this yoga. So one is Sadrishya. Sadrishya is where you become one with God. And then the next is Salokya, habitation with God. Can be realized not only in the Brahmalok, abode of the Brahman, after the fall of the body, but in this very body. How beautiful it would be. So if people ask, where are you living? Well, with God. Just imagine. No, you mean Auroville or Ashram. How does it matter? Wherever you go, wherever you travel, to live with God, to travel with God, I mean all the time. And it's so wonderful, because will anybody have any fear? Will anybody have any worries? Even as a kid, when we used to go with our dad, we didn't bother, okay? We didn't even have to howl, just say, oh, this is very nice. He knew what you have to get, he knew what you should not get. And we completely trusted, because we knew that he loves. So just imagine living with God. It's so wonderful. So will anyone have any fear? In fact, any real desire? Okay, he may desire momentarily, but if it's denied, he knows, okay, my papa is with me. That's it. So he says that even here in this body, when the embodied being plays with the Lord in his heart, when his mind is thrilled by the knowledge coming from him, When the intellect constantly hears his words and is conscious of his impulsion in each of his thoughts, this indeed is living in a human body with the Lord. He qualifies. Mind is impelled by the Lord. Heart is filled with the delight of the Lord. Life is moved by the breath of the Lord. The body becomes just a passive tool in his hands. Sayujya. So there is Salokya, then Sayujya, Sadrishya, Salokya, Sayujya. Sayujya, the identification with the Lord can also be achieved in this body. The Gita mentions living in the Lord. When the realization of the divine in all beings becomes permanent, when the senses see, hear, smell, taste and touch him only. Now you see, the Gita doesn't speak of this, but Sri Aurobindo is picking up from. That's why he said, don't put it as translation of the slokas. This is something which Mother and Sri Aurobindo have spoken. Mother has spoken, Sri Aurobindo's poem is there, Divine Sense. And where he says, whatever I eat, I am tasting fruits from paradise. Not our paradise, mountain, what paradise? We have a paradise garden, no? There's also one mountain paradise. So it's not that, but paradise, because it's coming from the divine. And that is something so beautiful. So here, he is reminding us. And they had wonderful disciples. Okay, always. Disciples are the most wonderful people. So Mother once says that, I'm listening to all these sounds and then there is the ship that also is making a toot, and she's just sharing this, and all this is becoming, turning into the sound of Om. So disciple is very intelligent. He says, no, mother, actually it is the ship which is tooting, which you are hearing as Om. No wonder, Sri Aurobindo said, I must admit, what a disciple. No, mother, because he doesn't understand the physical mind, that how can you, this is the ship, it's tooting, you're probably hearing it as Om. So, but when the inner senses awaken, so everything is felt as God. When the being becomes accustomed to live in him as a portion, then there can be the identification even in this body. But this consummation is entirely the result of an ascesis, practice of discipline. So I've shared this story several times, 1988, during my PG days. I had a photograph of Mother and Sri Aurobindo side of my table, post-graduation time, MD time. So one of my friends, he came. So we were meeting after MBBS, during MD all of. So he saw the photographs. He says, photographs is this? So I was partly in a jovial mood, and who will going to explain? I said, parents. So then he asked a very funny question. Your or Kavita's? My wife's. So then I said, both. He says, what are you saying? I said, both. He said, no, you are joking. I said, take it whatever way you want to take it. Then he said, no, please explain to me. Then I explained a little bit. And then when you live life that way, that we are all her children, life is so beautiful. What is this fight constantly, bitterness, anger? With whom? For whom? For what? So then he says, however, again continues with Svalpamasya. However, even little practice of this dharma gives great power, unalloyed joy, complete happiness and purity. So who can practice it? This dharma has not been created only for people with special qualities. Even for Sri Aurobindo's yoga, people ask, what are the qualities required, qualifications required? The lesser, the better qualifications. Because for a sattvic person to take up yoga is very difficult. He is so much full of himself that I am a good guy. People think that if I am good, I am already a yogi. And then they are seeing with that yardstick, this yogi is good or not, by his mental yardstick. So Sri Ramakrishna also said it's very difficult for a sattvic man to turn to God because he is so happy in his self-contented. So the Lord has said that the Brahmin, the Kshatriya, the Vaishya, the Shudra, man, woman and all beings of inferior birth can even, he has used the word papa yonihi, born to a womb of sin. That's how it literally means. Can come to him by adhering to this dharma. Even the greatest sinner, if he takes refuge in him, is quickly purified. We have verses in the Gita where Sri Krishna says that. That if even if the worst of person has turned towards me, you should take him as a saint. That there is his words. Simply because of the fact that he has turned, I purify him very soon and take him out of this darkness. Therefore, everyone ought to follow this dharma. In the temple of Jagannath, no distinction is made on account of caste. Yet the crowning glory attained through this dharma is in no way less than the supreme state indicated in other religions. So this is about the Gita, certain background. Then, is this the same thing in Sri Aurobindo's yoga? Here comes two letters of Sri Aurobindo. Our yoga is not identical with the yoga of the Gita, although it contains all that is essential in the Gita's yoga. So, in practice, even elsewhere, Sri Aurobindo said, if you have done, practice the yoga of the Gita, practice, not read. So, if you have practiced, it puts you on a very sound grounding for entry into this yoga. It's like entering through a royal road. In our yoga, we begin with the idea, the will, the aspiration of the complete surrender. So where Gita's yoga ends, swalpama, this sarvadharman parityajya mamekam. Actually, this yoga begins with that. Complete abandonment to the divine. But along with, as you proceed, aspiration, rejection. Rejection is not there in the Gita. It says there are three gunas and you go beyond. And in fact, Sri Krishna assured that when you act, these gunas will act, but you will be free. That's the promise given by Sri Krishna. But Sri Aurobindo speaks of transformation of the gunas, which is a different thing altogether. So, in fact, in whole of traditional yoga, there is nothing like transformation of the gunas. So, Satgun changes into divine light and divine purity. Rajogun changes into divine power and divine force. Tamogun changes into divine peace. But in traditional yoga, gunas are there, you are free. So in your operating system, it's there. It's like a man who is highly qualified in computer sciences but sits on the same old hard disk. So he says, I know I have learned it, but or somebody who has heard Krishna's flute in his inner ear. But when he plays, he says, I'm sorry, I have this flute with seven notes. I have to play this. So this must change. So in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, this too must change. Instrument must change. Everything must change. So he speaks of deliver the self involved in the lower nature by the self rising to freedom in the higher nature. That, by the way, was the line which he wrote, ascend to thy high self, create, endure. But we'll come to that. If we do not do this double movement, so here we have to at the same time reject the lower nature, deliver our consciousness from it, deliver the self involved in the lower nature, by the self rising to freedom in the higher nature. This is those lines, incidentally. Ascend to thy high self, create, endure. You are delivered from the grip of the lower nature. But Ashwapati says this is not enough. He says, I want the transformation of lower nature. So that's why we see that after those last six lines, eight lines of that passage from Savitri, Vision and the Boon, basically it closes with that. Above blind fate and the antagonist powers, moveless there stands a high and changing will. To its omnipotence, leave thy works results. All things shall change in God's transfiguring hour. So there we see the perfection of the yoga of the Gita. Ascend to thy high self, create, endure is part of that. Which the Divine Mother tells Ashwapati that this is the boon I am ready to give you. Don't ask for anything more. But Ashwapati asked for ye dil mange more. He said, no. I want you to take birth and change all future time, change human nature, all that is there. So while this passage which you mentioned, ascend to thy high self, create, endure, whatever be the reason why it is given in birthday card, but this is not the complete truth of what Sri Aurobindo is here to say. That's all I can say. It's only part truth. It's like you can say it's the essence of the yoga of the Gita. Ascend to thy high self. Ascent is obey, not ascent. It is A double S. So you say, instead of obeying your lower impulses, ascent. It's very interesting. It's not consent. Consent is you are the boss. You are consenting. Somebody is presenting you. Ascent literally means there is a higher will. It is deciding you have to give your assent. Okay, I assent. So assent to thy high self. Whatever the higher self is demanding of you, agree to that. Then next is create and endure. You have to endure because the passage is there. But the yoga of Sri Aurobindo goes beyond it. Since it came at a right point, so I thought I'll take it up. Okay, further. If we do not do this double movement, rejection of lower nature is not there in the yoga of the Gita. It says you have to rise above calm, crowd and all that. It says, and especially the six, but it doesn't speak about, you know, you have to rise above your opinions, your ideas. It says surrender to the divine and act under him, its impulsion. So we can say it is in a way implicit, but it's not brought out as a dynamic movement. So here, however, he says, if we do not do this double movement, we are in danger of making a tamasic and therefore unreal surrender. So I have given myself to God, whatever is happening through me now is God's doing. That's a tamasic surrender, and Sri Aurobindo warns against it, cautions us. Making no effort, no tapas, and therefore no progress. Or else we may make a rajasic surrender, not to the divine, but to some self-made false idea or image of the divine which masks our rajasic ego, or something still worse. Mother has reminded us that when people say mother likes this, mother does not like it, says this is not even to be thought about, forget about speaking. In fact, she says, what do you know what mother likes and what mother does not like? Because all these ideas are pure mental conceptions, mental image of the divine, what the divine wants, does not want. We judge things based on that, and we should be very careful. It is only that, in fact, if divine dislikes somebody, there will be no hope. You know, there is the story of Lord Rama at night going and at night he's sitting on the seashore. And Hanumanji is following him. Why at night he is going there and sitting? What is he doing? So he sees Rama is picking up the stones and putting it in the sea. And plop, they go down. Again he does. Now Hanuman understands what is going on in the Lord's mind. So he says, you must be wondering that by writing your name, the stones float. But when you yourself are doing it, it doesn't float. He said, yes, Hanuman, what is the mystery? He says, very simple. He whom you leave, where will he go? He will drown. You are leaving the stone. It's going down. But with your name, they float. It's a story. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a historical, but a very beautiful way of conveying. So divine cannot leave anyone, because doing that means finished annihilation of existence. So we are the ones who have to get rid of certain things. And then we rise up to that ultimate state. It is not a fact that the Gita gives the whole base of Sri Aurobindo's message. For the Gita seems to admit the cessation of birth in the world as the ultimate aim, or at least the ultimate culmination of yoga. It speaks about that, you know, ultimate moksha. But it gives a very wide path, which is the Jivan Mukti. It does not bring forward the idea of spiritual evolution or the idea of the higher planes and the supramental truth consciousness and the bringing down of that consciousness as the means of the complete transformation of earthly life. This is a fact. Gita doesn't speak of these things at all. It's a base. So then the question is that where is the hint? One place where Gita hints, though it can be interpreted in another way, if you take the literal translation. It speaks of Jaramaran. Maybe you may remember that shloka also. That they are the rare yogis who try to fight this old age death, the Jaramaran, you know, because there are very few who fight these things. It doesn't elaborate anything, and you can interpret it this way also, that you don't fight, you surrender. But that is something which the Gita, 2-3 places Gita hints at the supramental possibility, but doesn't at all enter into it. And certainly not transformation. There is no mention of transformation anywhere in the Gita. So we should be very clear, the main aspect of Sri Aurobindo's yoga is not there. Where is it? Is it there anywhere in the literature? He says, yes, the idea of the supermind, the truth consciousness, is there in the Rig Veda. According to Sri Aurobindo's interpretation, and in one or two passages of the Upanishads, so we know the passage he is referring to, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapihitam Mukham Tattvam Pushanna Pavranu Satya Dharmaya Trishte. This is entirely opening the doors to the supermind. Yajnavalk was most likely Nalini Da in his previous life. But in the Upanishads, it is there only in seed, in the conception of the being of knowledge. Also, there is the Vijnanamaya Purusha, exceeding the mental, vital and physical being. In the Rig Veda, the idea is there, but in principle only. It is not developed, and even the principle of it has disappeared from the Hindu tradition. This settles this question that people often say, it is all there in the Vedas, it's all there. Well, Vedas are very beautiful things. But if you start saying that, well, transformation is there, everything is there, then as a core, as a seed, as a base, it is wonderful. But there is always something more, and that's what the Hindu tradition is about, that we are moving toward the future. It is these, among these things, among others, that constitute the novelty of Sri Aurobindo's message as compared with the Hindu tradition. The idea that the world is not either a creation of Maya, even Sri Krishna says it, and something which at least used to hit me very hard, I said, please don't say this, please don't say this. And that was Anityam Asukham Lokam Bhajasvamam. I said, Lord, don't say this. I mean, to me, Krishna has been like a dearest friend. So I said, why are you saying this? Don't say this. Anityam Asukham Lokam. With you, there can be no Asukham. So, but it's there. And it comes as the crowning movement. Anityam Asukham Lokam Bhajasvamam. This transient, unhappy world. Remember me and walk through it. There is a sense of not pessimism, but you don't feel comfortable, Krishna, the Lord of Delight, saying this. Of course, there is a context, there is a certain situation in which he is saying this. But Sri Aurobindo doesn't say that. That may be the present situation of the world. The idea that the world is not either a creation of Maya or only a play, Leela of the divine, or a cycle of births in the ignorance from which we have to escape. All this is not there in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. But in tradition, it's there. But now here comes something beyond Maya and Leela. We don't have really a word for it, because Hindi word would be Udghatan. Leela simply means it's the ways of the Lord you cannot understand. Don't worry about it. Go back, become one with him. That's the end of the story. Why are you bothered? Why the Lord is doing what he is doing? We have that bhajan by Udhav, Udhav Karman ki gati nyari, Ujjwal pankh diye bagle ko koel ke hi vidhikari, Murakh murakh raj karat hai pandit firat vikari. It goes on to say like that. Don't try to understand the world. It is his leela. He's not saying it is illusion. It says there is something happening, there is a truth behind, but you cannot know. Human beings cannot know it. But leela brings something of that aspect of the delight in it. But Sri Aurobindo says something of another level altogether. We are conscious participants. It is the manifestation which, if there is a Hindi word, it would be Udghatan. But we don't have that word so far. But a field of manifestation in which there is a progressive evolution of the soul and the nature in matter and from matter through life and mind to what is beyond mind, till it reaches the complete revelation of Satchidananda in life, not just within, but in life. It is this that is the basis of the yoga and gives a new sense to life. And then two more passages, after which we'll stop. I may say that the way of the Gita is itself a part of the yoga here, and those who have followed it to begin with or as a first stage have a stronger basis than others for this yoga. So, especially equanimity, etc., Aurobindo has, you know, desireless action, nishkam karma, remember and offer. They are fundamental practices. But then he reminds us, the Gita does not speak expressly of the Divine Mother. Divine Mother here is only as para prakriti jiva bhuta. This is a passing mention. After that, Shri Krishna takes over. Etada yoni. He says, out of my womb the whole creation emerges, which is fine, which is true. But the Divine Mother, because Divine Mother later on came with the Tantra and, you know, and Divine Mother is the creatrix principle. You can't change anything. See, even in a home, unless the mom consents, dad is helpless. He may only say it should be like this. He says, okay, okay. That's it. She will do it her own way. That's the beauty. She will do when she is convinced about what has to be done. It mentions her only as the Paraprakriti, who becomes the Jiva, Paraprakriti Jiva Bhuta. That is, who manifests the divine in the multiplicity and through whom all these worlds are created by the Supreme, and he himself descends as the avatar. The Gita follows the Vedantic tradition, which leans entirely on the Ishvara aspect of the divine and speaks little of the Divine Mother, because its object is to draw back from world nature and arrive at the supreme realization beyond it. Of course, it gives us a grand trunk road through karma, which is amazing, but still it is to withdraw from the world nature. The Tantric tradition leans on the Shakti or Ishwari aspect and makes all depend on the Divine Mother, because its object is to possess and dominate the world nature and arrive at the supreme realization through it. This yoga, the integral yoga, insists on both the aspects. The surrender to the Divine Mother is essential, for without it there is no fulfillment of the object of the yoga. So all these things are there which make the newness of this yoga. In fact, a lot of things, transformation of not only your consciousness and nature, but even of the instruments eventually. Physical transformation, which is part of it. Surrender to the Divine Mother. Rejection of all that comes in the way of the yoga. Everything is different. But the Gita gives a very good base through nishkam karma, practice of equanimity, and remember and offer the divine, wait for his impulsion. All these are beautiful practices given in the Gita. So I think today I can say that from the heart we can close. Thank you so much, Ma. Okay, it's just time. So we'll close it now. Maybe if there are questions, we can take it up on mail or something. Anything else? I thought that we have left few things, so that's why I took it up. Okay. Jema.
I have a question. Ah.
Oh, okay. Okay. I understood. So I'll put it. So I'll tell you, it's very interesting. There are two, three ways of answering it. One is how Sri Aurobindo explains it, or rather puts it across. Okay, let's start by believing that everything is done by God. So I'll do nothing. Try it, it won't be possible. That's why it is said, karmahin nar pavat nahi sabahi nachavat Ram Gusai. Now put it practically. Today only somebody was asking, should we pray? What is the use of prayer? Ultimately, divine will happen. Oh, he and so he jo Ram Rachi Rakha. We have this, no? Must we understand. Oh, he and so he jo Ram Rachi Rakha, ko kari tark badhavai shakha. Now the beauty is that in our ignorance, what the divine will does, it has already decided what it has to do. So does prayer have a meaning? He will impel you to pray. You will reach a point. He is impelling. He is forming the connection. Oh fool, wake up, pray. So what you'll pray? You'll pray for some material things. Let's put it in a very pragmatic way. You pray that I want my son to clear his exams or I want some money or whatever. It is already decided and you are praying moved by him for this which has already been decided. A prefixed match and you get it, you feel very nice. Ah, so nice. Somebody asked Shrivindu, why does the divine do this play? So he says, so that one day when you keep getting it, after some time you say, let's love him for his own sake. So there is, it's like initially when we are in ignorance, all these are means which are part of the working of nature. It drives us to that point and we get it. It seems that actually it was my prayer which gave. And when people believe it, they get very hard hit when the divine does not, you know, give what they ask for. They become cross with the divine. So when I used to come earlier in the ashram, I would say, one day I was bragging, ah, so nice. See, in the dining room, we get, I wanted kathal. Today even kathal pieces were there. How lovely. I was speaking of this, went for lunch. And that day, the thing which I cannot eat ever is karela. Bitter gourd, and it was there in the dal. So I said, I have talked so much in front of everyone that, you know, I will take whatever mother gives as prasad and see so nicely she gives. Now, what do I do? I ate it. Choice nahi choda. Then I realized, slowly I observed that you will see that there is a time when the divine grants. Actually, he makes you appear, you have asked and he has granted. You know, there's a, you connect, you start connecting. Then sometimes he grants, sometimes he doesn't grant. Then he sometimes take away what you most cherish. Look at the Pandavas. If that has started happening, that means now he is, knows you are his. And he is now preparing you for the direct obedience. Mother would sometimes shout at Amrita. And he would very nicely smile and say, yes, mother. And somebody asked him, you are smiling. Mother was shouting at you. He said, have you ever heard her shout at anybody? I am the only person. She has confidence that he will always listen. And then people wanted to confirm, not confirm that way, but they asked the mother about Mahakali methods. He says, I don't use it on anyone. It's only with Amrit that sometimes I have used this method because he will not misunderstand me. So it looks that we are asking, we are praying, we are striving. And this illusion is necessary when we are in that state. And even if we don't want, we cannot do it otherwise. We'll be impelled by nature. That's how he says, your nature will compel you. That's what he says in the beginning in the Gita. That you want to not fight the war? Okay, sit in the pavilion. You will be impelled to fight by your own nature. That's the grip of nature in ignorance. Then you pray and you get a response. You feel my prayer and the divine responded. Very good, fine. It's wonderful. You start a bond. And one day divine will say, okay, shall we take the game to next level? Yes, yes, maja aa raha hai. Whatever I pray, mother grants. Okay, next level. Next level, sometimes it is granted, sometimes it's not granted. And you wonder what's happening. After sometimes say, next level, okay, mother. Okay, now you say, let thy will be done. Seriously, mother? Yes. So it's the play of the Lord at different levels. It is the divine who does all, and that's why there is, thank God, he does it all, that's why there is hope. But in the beginning, when we are in a state of cross ignorance, he works from behind the veil through his yog maya. We live by that illusion, I am the one who is doing, and this is, it's like a child. See, when a child comes back and says, oh, mama, I did this, and mama says, oh, so wonderful, very good. It means nothing. I used to come back from my school and say, I came first. Every day I would say. And after some time you got used to it. What was first? If there is a question asked to the class, I would quickly raise my hand and answer. To me it was first, coming first. And it means nothing. But it's an encouragement you get in that play. And doesn't matter, you think it's your nature. He says, okay, come proceed. But a time comes for everyone. When you are ready for the next level and the divine knows it. And that time the game changes. But you have not asked him, he knows. And then you seek, you are now ready for the next level game. Yeah.
Divine is already in the present.
Yes, so divine is already involved in the creation. Very true. So who is an avatar? Now, involved divine is waking up or releasing. Involved means he is completely asleep. Let's put it like that. That's what involved means. So, but because he is there, it's like Shiva on whose breast the dance is taking place. So what does Shiva do? Shiva's presence steadies the dance of Kali. So this divine is sleeping, let's put it like that, in creation, because it steadies, otherwise the dance will become completely chaotic. He's like the tortoise. Kashyap avatar, what does he do? He does nothing, he's just lying down below for the Mandar, Parvat, everything to happen. But when there is a special shift that is required, so he allows creation to proceed, the dance, chaotic, nice, everything, he is steadying it. But a time comes when now the next level of the dance must take place. Then the same divine who is below, lying anyways, takes, it's not like he has become absent there, he now enters into creation as the manifest divine. And whatever he brings with him in the manifestation, now creation, the tide of time will turn in that direction. So that's why we have the stories of the great flood and all that. So it's for that purpose. Mother describes this, one of her visions where she entered and the divine who is lying in the inconscient, he opens his eyes and sees. It basically means that okay, now next level of manifestation is to become. So the divine below is also now aware fully. He is forgotten himself. So he has to wake up step by step. It's there in many myths in different ways. In the myth of Durga waking up, all this is there. But that will take me in another 2 hours, a different direction. I love these. So we'll stop here and maybe we'll come back again, maybe in August. Yes, sure. Yes, yes. In the Gita. Yes. Which is how the typical way it is explained is that you are doing your duty without any attachment. But the Gita is not saying that. The Gita is speaking of the inner nirvana, but it's speaking of the impulsion of the divine. That's why it is hinting at something greater. So it says, Nimit Matra Bhava Sabhyasachi. So what you are saying is how it is, and at in the beginning, that's how it appears that, well, I am inwardly free. Whatever work is given to me, I am doing it in a detached way. But the Gita doesn't say that. So Gita speaks of the divine will. That this is my will, because he, and Arjun is confused about it exactly, that, you know, what are you saying? Okay, I'm free inside to do whatever or not to do. So why should I do? That's what his question is. That if I'm inwardly free, why should I engage in this ghoram karma? That's how he puts it. Then Shri Krishna shows who he is. There is a series of questions. And then when he shows that kalosmi, I am time the destroyer. This is my will to destroy these people. Here you are, an instrument. Then he says, sir, agreed. Tell me what I have to do and I'll do. Nasto moha. So it finally, the next level is. First level is you are inwardly free, but out the in synthesis of yoga also, Sri Aurobindo takes it up. That I am inwardly free, but let's say as a doctor, I am doing my work. I should continue to do it detached, not bothering about, you know, any results in this sense, that what I get, praise, blame, etc. This is a stage, important stage. Next is, but is that what the Divine Mother wants of me? So that comes when sarva dharman parityaja, because initially we are impelled by our dharma. By dharma, I mean that after all, something is impelling me. That impulsion is by my dharma. Then when I wait, completely surrender, then I wait for the divine impulsion. So there is a line, a phrase in the Gita, Sarva Sankalp Sanyasi, Aniket, all these terms. So now I have surrendered, I wait for the divine impulsion and then I act. That is the difference. Inner freedom and outer action. Okay, so we'll, of course, please feel free, you can write anytime. Jema, thank you so much.